Okay, we are going to begin tonight's post-race availabilities. We are now joined by the winning crew chief of the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway, Phil Surgeon with the number one Trackhouse Racing Chevrolet team. Phil, 600 miles worth of strategy and, you know, certain adjustments. Can you just go through on, you know, the key ones that ultimately led you taking away the victory tonight?
Yeah, 600 is a long race. Starting 40th today, we had a lot of work to do, and you know, we spent the first half the race really just kind of slowly chipping away at it. And you know, in stage one, we got caution came out unfortunately and set us back. We had gained 10 or 12 spots and set us back five or six of those. So a little bit of a reset halfway through stage one again, but it was really just a slow progression. We started the race a little bit tight. We knew that the balance would come to us as we got better track position, but, you know, we were kind of banking on that. So over the course of stage two, we had a green flag cycle that, you know, kind of proved that the car was where it needed to be once we had clean air. So kind of had a baseline to work off of. But like I said, just a slow progression, and putting ourselves in position to start stage three in the top five was important. And ultimately, that last cycle and Denny being short on fuel allowed us to be a contender.
All right. Well, we'll begin opening it up to questions. If you have one, we'll raise your hand. We'll get a mic to you. We'll start with Jacob, then we'll go to Jordan.
Jacob Seelman, Race Face Digital. Phil, two for you first. Ross was actually talking about it on the post-race show a minute ago. Take me back to the environment from Saturday night when you guys are building the backup car. Ross said a lot of guys didn't leave till 2:30 in the morning, got maybe 2 or 3 hours of sleep. I mean, what was that whole process like for you guys as a team, and what's the emotion that he was able to pay all that effort off with a win?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually enjoy answering this one. Yesterday in practice, we rolled out there and we were really fast. I think we were fastest on 5, 10, 20 lap averages, and then blew a tire. So pretty deflating in the moment where, you know, recently we've not been the fastest. We've lacked a little bit of speed, and this week we roll out and we're really fast and crash. So pretty deflating, you know, midday on Saturday. And then, you know, this group of guys that I've got is relentless, and there was no question that everybody was going to give every bit of effort they had. And we brought the car back to the shop, and we probably had 30 people come in. We had, you know, obviously all the road crew that was at the track was there. We had engine support from ECR. We had, you know, shop guys that were at concerts and ball games and everything that just dropped what they were doing, came to the shop. And like I said, probably 30 people there at 8:30 last night. And as the night wore on and, you know, different stages of the process kind of evolved, we sent some of those guys home. And the last of us, there was probably 8 or 10 of us that left at 2:30 last night. And the first guys got back there at 5:30. So, a couple hours of sleep and back at it this morning. And we worked all the way up until the wire, until we had to reinspect today at 2 p.m.
And from your perspective, what's it been like to have a driver like Ross behind the wheel who, much like your crew guys, is not afraid to put every ounce of himself into this? And you used the word relentless, and I like that, because I felt like watching him that last run, it was either I'm going to win this race or I'm going to put this car back in the wall trying to win this race.
Yeah, for sure. And when he passed the 11 and the 24 was right ahead of him, I think that was just an example of that. I mean, it was a risky move, but when the wind's on the line, you're willing to risk a little bit more. And, it's awesome. And that's what you need. It's a requirement for drivers to have that desire and that drive to just zone in, and you can feel it when it's happening. You can feel those moments when the car's good and the driver's zoned in. You can tell in the tone of his voice and how he's driving the car and how fast it is and the risk level that he's willing to assume. You can just tell as it's kind of shaping up, and with 15 or 20 to go, we're catching him maybe a tenth, half a tenth a lap. We didn't hear from him on the radio, but you know, we all knew what was happening there, and you know, that's a requirement to win these races these days.
Come up front to Jordan next.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic. The perception is that Trackhouse maybe doesn't have the speed in its cars, at least consistently, week in and week out. It seems like Ross has really been doing kind of a Herculean effort to really kind of carry the cars maybe to higher than what they have been. Is that realistic, or what has Ross been doing this year? Because it seems like he's been doing a lot more and really pushing this team to a higher plane.
Yeah, I think some of that may be real, and some of that's maybe just the narrative. Our Saturdays haven't been real good. You know, our practice speed has just been average, and our qualifying hasn't been very good. Certainly a step worse than it has been in the past. By about mid-race on Sundays, we're able to get car balanced and driving right, and we're able to execute pretty well. Execute on pit road, execute with strategy. We get the car driving pretty well, and we're able to finish in the top 10 at a lot of these intermediate tracks. Certainly we've had hiccups. You know, Kansas wasn't great, Homestead wasn't great, but you know, by the time Sunday rolls around, we can put the whole package together, and sure, we want a little bit more speed, and we certainly want a little smoother Saturday, a little better qualifying that allows us to pick a better pit stall, and all which contributes to more race success.
The knock on Ross, you know, through 2022, 2023 maybe, was he wasn't always finishing races as well as he was running, right? Something would happen, he maybe get impatient or whatever. It seems like now there's almost like a different Ross behind the wheel, like much more of a bigger perspective on let's make sure we get there, and then putting himself in position and then capitalizing. Is that a fair perception?
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's true with anybody. You know, with experience and with time, and in this case with race starts and competing in the top 10 and in the top 5 and winning races, you learn and people evolve, and he has too. The Ross today is certainly a more well-rounded driver due to those experiences over the last few years.
All right, we got time for a few more questions. We'll come up to Dustin, then we'll go to Matt, then we'll come back to Kelly.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Phil, can you give me a sense of perspective? Essentially, you rebuilt this the backup car in a day. The car that was wrecked yesterday, can you give me a sense of how much time and effort was put into that car? And here you come back and win on a car that was built in one day. I mean, did you spend was it the car that was crashed had been worked on for 3 weeks to prepare for this, or 4 weeks or something like that?
Yeah, so the normal build cycle is 3 to 4 weeks, depending on how we're turning over chassis. You know, every team's allotted 7 chassis, so we have to use them in a cycle that makes sense. And the typical build cycle is 3 to 4 weeks, and that's 6:30 to 3:30 Monday through Friday. And it goes through every stage of the build process, from chassis assembly to the body assembly to suspension, engine install, dyno, final setup. So the cadence is a little bit different. The car that we won with tonight was slated to be a Nashville backup car. So it wasn't just a pile of parts when we walked in at 3 o'clock yesterday. It was a fully assembled car. It had been set up. It actually had been chassis dyno. It didn't have an engine in it anymore. So when we got there, there was certainly a ton of work to do. We put a good bit of interior in it. We changed transaxle. We had to use the engine from the primary car that was at the racetrack. And then there's, you know, the wrap, final set on suspension, final set on the body, and then final scale and such, all those last minute adjustments. So number of hours, it's hard to say. Like I mentioned earlier to the gentleman over there, I mean, we had 30 people working there for a while, and into the night that dwindled down to maybe 10. But you know, it was a ton of man hours in the last, you know, 36 hours that went into the car we had today.
How much sleep have you had in the last night?
2.5 hours.
So today you get here at 1 o'clock, go through inspection, get through that, and the garage officially opens. You can do the changes to the car. I think there's eventually when the car gets done, you've got a little bit of time. What in that little bit of time today before the race were you able to do? Are you thinking about Nashville? Are you trying to take a cat nap, or how are you trying to relax before this race with 2 hours of sleep?
Yeah, it was a little bit more stress today, and frankly, a little bit less time. Even though we got here a little bit early to do inspection, and we got through inspection pretty quickly, and we did warm ups on time with all the other cars in the garage. And then, you know, there really isn't a whole lot of time on Sundays between warm ups and race time. We come back to the hauler, you know, collect the last little bit of notes. We have a team meeting with the all the drivers, crew chiefs, and spotters, and then I had a team meeting with the one guys, eat dinner, and it's time to walk out to pit road and get set up out there.
Let's get a mic over to Matt here. Matt Weaver, The Sporting News. Does the spec car nature of the next gen make it easier, not to, you know, quickly build the car or unload it, but to have faith or confidence that it's plug and play and just put the setup in and it'll be as good as your very fast primary was?
I wouldn't agree with plug and play, but you can take all the parts. It's time consuming and it's labor intensive, but you can make all the cars nearly as good as the others. But it takes a long time to do that. You know, there's a lot of intricacies with these cars. Years ago, we were dealing in eighths and quarters of an inch. And now we're dealing in 5 thou and 10 thou. Like the increments that we're talking about have just, the scales have changed in magnitude of what used to matter to what matters now. So the complexity of the equipment we use just to measure the cars is, you know, significantly different than what it was before. And all the parts are available. So before, building a body was not possible overnight, but you could put a next gen body together overnight because you can just take parts off the shelf. Configuring them correctly at the level of detail that it takes to run, you know, in the front 10 at a cup race is a Herculean effort.
And then, missing the playoffs last year, and it starts without you guys. Obviously, you guys stayed competitive, were in the mix, won a race. But does it feel any different knowing that that show goes on without you and you're not a part of it, and now you guys are again?
Yeah, I mean, in this sport, the goal every season is a championship. And if you don't make the playoffs, you don't even have the opportunity to compete for that. So winning a race in the regular season, advancing to the playoffs is huge. It just ensures that you still are capable of achieving the ultimate goal that you set out to do every year.
All right, for the sake of time, we'll take one final question with Kelly over here on the right.
Kelly Crandall, racer.com. Phil, the initial plan yesterday was to fix the primary car. Can you walk through when it was realized that it was just too much, or what was maybe the one part or piece that couldn't be repaired, and how difficult was that decision after seeing how fast it had been in practice?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is true. Yesterday, we drug it into the garage and we started doing some initial analysis on what was bent and broken and need to be replaced. And as we started pulling parts off, it just became more evident that there was, you know, a section of the rear frame that was bent, probably beyond repair. And then at that moment, it became, you know, a necessity to go to a backup car. And unfortunately, that was probably an hour or an hour and a half after we got to the garage and had already started working on repairing the primary car. So although it took a long time to identify, by the time we got all the parts, you know, in the car disassembled to the point where we could, you know, fully see all the damage, it was evident we needed to go to a backup car.
I think Ross got about 20 laps in practice, and we saw that he was fastest in, you know, 10, 15, 20 lap averages. What was learned in those laps that when you guys put the backup car together, that could you take anything? Was there any lessons of can we apply this to the backup car to make it just as fast?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. With the next gen car and with any race car, you know, the baseline that we established in practice. We take meticulous notes and measurements on every part and piece of that car, and in order to be able to replicate it for, you know, for Sunday today from the car we had on Saturday, we have meticulous notes that we can take from this car today and apply to Nashville or to Michigan. So that knowledge of what we had on the track on Saturday, what that setup was, what that configuration was, and knowing that that was fast and competitive in the conditions on Saturday, we took all that knowledge and applied it to Sunday, and we made some small adjustments for, you know, weather conditions today, longer runs today, and we're able to put it together pretty well.
All right, Phil. Well, congrats on the win tonight. Thanks for coming in and get some much-deserved rest.
Thank you.
We can take Justin. Yeah. Okay, we're now joined by the winning owner of tonight's race, Justin Marks, and our Trackhouse Racing. We'll head straight to questions for this one. We'll go to Jordan up front, then we'll go to Jacob in back.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic. It seems like Ross this year is really doing a lot of heavy lifting with the team. They're not qualifying well necessarily, but he's really pushing it and pushing them to a higher level than almost like almost even better than we've seen him before. What have you seen from Ross this year?
Well, I mean, exactly that. We don't have a speed right now that we've had the last couple of years, and you know, the sport kind of ebbs and flows, and teams have periods of a lot of winning and then get passed by and have to kind of regroup or re-engineer the team to get back. That's kind of like where we're at right now. And you know, Ross is you know, he's such an elite talent, and he's really one of the founding members of this organization. And, you know, what I've said sort of throughout the year is like, you know, the problem that we have to diagnose is the fact that we don't unload with a lot of speed. Like, we have to do a lot of work on the weekends to put races together. And the execution that Ross and a lot of the teams inside of Trackhouse have is really, really good on Sundays. It's just really hard to do it in this era of the sport. If you're starting 25th, 28th, 30th, you know, whatever, you know, to get up there is really, really difficult to do. I think as we go through the process, Ross is very invested in the rebuilding process and really helping us kind of diagnose, you know, where there's gaps in the organization, where we need to, you know, be focused on things to get us back back to where we need to be. And, you know, we've been working really hard on it, and we unloaded with really good speed this weekend. Obviously, you know, had a problem in practice, went to the backup car, you know, started last, but the confidence was really, really high. When we wrecked this car on Saturday, and I was sitting there at the car in the garage, and they were pulling parts off it, and Ross left the infield care center, and he walked up to the car. He had a huge smile on his face. And he was like, I know this sucks. He's like, but that's what I'm talking about. Bringing cars to the racetrack like that, that's what I'm talking about. And he was just super pumped. And, you know, that's just him being super invested in the process. And I think Ross is in the conversation of the best drivers in the NASCAR Cup Series right now. And, you know, he shows that when he goes out there and puts the team on his shoulders right now as we try to rebuild.
Part of his evolution, it seems like, you know, if you go back to 2022, 2023, there's a lot of races. He had a lot of speed, you know, a lot of laps led, you know, all that stuff. Wasn't getting the finishes to correspond with it, right? And now, though, it's kind of the opposite. So what is his evolution as a driver where he now kind of looks at the bigger picture and is kind of sees, like, maybe I don't need to be so, I don't know, lack of a better term, impatient, if you will?
Yeah, it's experience. I mean, it's experience and understanding, you know, what it takes to be successful as a NASCAR Cup Series driver. And I think if you look back through, you know, time, and you look at some of these really, really talented people that have shown up in the Cup Series and just had all this talent and all this speed, but not a lot of experience, sometimes it was problematic at the beginning. I think of like Brad Keselowski, and I think like some of these guys that showed up and ruffled some feathers, and then they figured out how to sort of settle into a place where they can harness their talent and their speed into a way that's really productive in the races. And I think that's the evolution that that Ross has gone through, is that he knows how to take that speed and deploy it when it makes the most sense and how to really put full races together. And I think it just comes with time and experience. He's a very, very intelligent person. He's very cerebral. He, you know, he really digests the races when they're over and looks back through them. And I think, you know, he just had to go through the experience of understanding where the give and take is and how to really be a complete driver. And he's done that.
We'll hit Jacob and then we'll jump to Jack.
Jacob Zuman, RaceFace Digital. Justin, you're right. Two for you. First, Phil was in here and talked a lot about the just the environment of the rebuild Saturday night. It actually got me thinking back to something you said. I think it was after Suarez's win at Atlanta last year about the culture that you've tried to really build and invest in at Trackhouse, to have guys that are willing to give up their days off, come in, spend that time, lose sleep, and then pay it off with Ross getting a win like this. Is that what you're talking about when you're looking for this kind of relentless effort from your guys and your crew that goes into making this successful?
That's exactly what I'm looking for. I mean, this weekend, I think, was a masterclass in never giving up and grinding. And, you know, it wasn't just the one team that built that car last night. I mean, it was people from all corners of the organization that said, I'll drop what I'm doing and drive to the shop and help. And because we've all been working so hard the last month and a half to sort of turn this team around, and you know, at a time like this when we unloaded and we were so fast and it was like, man, like we're starting to get there, like we can feel the thing kind of turning around, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. I stood in front of everybody at this organization, you know, the first day that I took ownership of it back at the end of 2021, and I said, you know, we have everything that we need to be successful here. We just got to work together. We got to believe in each other, and we have to fundamentally believe that we can do it. That we can go win big races and contend for championships. And if we support each other and go the extra mile and do whatever it takes, then we can get there. And I think this weekend was a beautiful expression of that. And I am so, I don't want to sound, you know, romantic or whatever, but it's, I mean, I am just so unbelievably proud of everybody, because what they did this weekend was very, very, very difficult. And it was truly a team win, you know, putting a race car together, building a race car last night, bringing it to the racetrack, starting last, making good changes, good pit stops, good strategy, and then to what Jordan and I were talking about after that last pit stop, just putting it on the shoulders of our amazing race car driver Ross Chastain to go punch it into victory lane. It's incredible.
Obviously, so much focus tonight on what Ross did, and rightfully so, but you had the fourth car out with your young talent in Connor Zilich, and I'm curious, obviously, start two for him, so there's a lot to be looked forward to. What's your assessment of his early evolution, not just, you know, in the couple starts in the Cup car, but really on the Xfinity side, and what do you hope or see his progression or pathway being over the next couple of years as you work to develop him?
Yeah, I think one of the things that makes Connor special is his rate of adaptability. And I've seen it a couple times in my life. There's a lot of talented race car. There's a lot of young race car drivers that are fast, a lot of guys that are talented. So it's like, how do you kind of, you know, look through all of those people and find the couple that are like the real standouts? And to me, it's really rate of adaptability. I mean, you know, Connor's been incredibly successful the first time he's sat in cars and the first time he's been to races, going out there and just figuring it out really quickly. So, you know, I think that he's having a, you know, some ways a difficult season at Xfinity, but incredible amount of speed. He's had some bad luck, whatever, but he's won a race. He'll go to the playoffs and luck will come his way and he'll make a run for it. And then in the Cup car, you know, this is a development driver of ours. First time we've ever like really had a development driver. And I think development means supporting him, on, you know, Fridays and Saturdays when he's over at JRM and allowing him to have access to the tools and the company and everything, and then getting him experience in the Cup car. You have to these days just put him in the car and throw him out there on the racetrack in the Cup Series, because there's no practice and there's no testing. And so, you know, when we're like, hey, you know, you're 18 years old, you know, we think you're on your way to the Cup Series pretty quickly, we got to just put you in the car. And, you know, obviously, you know, putting him in the car at COTA, you know, a racetrack that he's been to, done a lot of road racing. You kind of eliminate as many new things as possible so he can learn kind of the flow of a cup race. And then after that, you know, we'd circled this one on the calendar because he just gets a lot of laps. He just gets to go out there and race for 4 hours and just get a ton of experience and learn, you know, restarts, coming on and off pit road, all that kind of stuff. And so it's just part of getting him exposure, you know, to the cup car. We'll see what his future holds. But, you know, right now it's like we have a mechanism in the company to put that extra car out like we've done with Project 91. And, you know, we just want him to get that experience. No expectations for results or anything like that. You know, he got, when the 84 went around today and he had some contact with him, it tore the underbody off. He just was tight the rest of the night. So then it just became like, okay, let's just make the laps and kind of learn the flow of the race, you know, figure out how it's going to tax my body racing for 600 miles, just all that kind of stuff. So it's just, we have an opportunity to give them a learning experience, and we'll continue to do that. But the Cup Series is, it's a different sport than the Xfinity Series. I mean, it is just so, so difficult. And the only way to learn and get ready for something like that is just go out there and do it.
Is there a balance of trying to make sure he doesn't rush too quickly?
Yeah, for sure. Because we've seen it in the past that guys have moved up too quickly, and it's been difficult for him. So, you know, we're you know, being very measured in our approach, and we're talking about what his future. We don't know what his future looks like right now, but we're happy that he's in that JRM car. We're happy that we're getting him laps in the Cup car. And, you know, we have a lot of faith in his ability. We think he's a really, really special talent, but we have to be intentional and mindful about how we bring him up, because we want to certainly give him the best opportunity to succeed.
All right, moving quickly, we're going to go to Zach over here in the middle, then we'll go to Dustin, then Shane.
Zach Sterniolo, NASCAR.com. Justin, certainly Shane's Chicago win was a signature moment, but the first crown jewel victory for this organization comes just down the road from the team shop. What is the significance of this moment for you personally, but also for the whole of Trackhouse Racing?
I think for me personally and the whole of Trackhouse Racing are the same thing. I mean, I'm a team person, and I'm like, I don't, it doesn't matter what I feel about it. I mean, it's about the team. It's about getting a bunch of people together that believe that we can go do things like pass Hendrick Motorsports with 10 laps to go in the Coke 600 and win it. Like, we just believe that we can give our drivers the opportunity to do those things. And so I my mind raced and I forgot your question, but thank you. So, you know, this is obviously, you have these marquee events, right? So like the Daytona 500, I've got my own opinions about the Daytona 500 as a race, but I think when you have these tentpole events that have a lot of history and they're meaningful, it carries special significance, because obviously this is, you know, the only home game that this sport has. And we have a lot of people that come that don't typically get to go to the races that come out for this race. And we have wives and girlfriends and kids and everybody comes out to this race. And people that work so hard, you know, 365 days a year, that don't actually get to go to the racetrack and watch the race cars, they're here tonight. And a ton of sponsors and a ton of fans. And then, you know, when you look at a race like the Coke 600, you can't look at a race like this and not envision, you know, Dale Earnhardt driving through the grass here and you know, Jeff Gordon's first win and like these big moments and all this big history when they first built the racetrack and all that stuff. So it's a moment that holds special significance for everybody in the company, and it's a moment that, you know, that it's an honor. It's just an honor to win here, because it's such an important event to the history of the sport.
Let's go to Dustin over here next.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Justin, compared to some of the established car owners who've had success and been in the sport for a long time, you're just still a youngster and still learning, going through that process with being in a few years. And I'm just curious, what are the lessons that you're learning that you feel like are going to help you close the gap with Hendrick, Gibbs, and Penske at this point? Because they seem to be those three teams, and then a gap to others. Everybody's kind of fighting for that. How do you close that gap, and how are the things that you have done right or maybe didn't do right the last couple of years to get back up to get into a space like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I mean, I would answer that by I'm still learning that. That fundamentally drives my days every day, is trying to figure out, you know, what it is that makes those organizations as successful as they are. Now, if we want to be intellectually lazy, we can just say, well, they just have more money and they have more people. And I think that, you know, that's certainly important. They have a lot of resources, and that's very important. So, like, if you look back in 2022, we had, 20 winners, 19, whatever it was, 20 winners in 2022. And then those teams that have all those resources, they just their learning and their development curve is quick because they've got the resources to put behind it. And so, you know, you come to a year like this where, you know, okay, had Wood Brothers win, Trackhouse wins. Other than that, you know, C-Bell's three in a row, and Gibbs has, you know, or Denny has two and all that. So how do we close the gap? I mean, I think this car represents an opportunity to do that. That's why I'm here. I mean, I would not have started Trackhouse and raced in the Cup Series if they didn't go to this race car, because I think that it provides an opportunity to close the gap. You know, what have I learned along the way? You know, this is a people game. I mean, I do really work hard on trying to get, you know, talented people motivated to do really good work. I mean, I feel like when I sit up here, I say a lot of cliches, but it's true. I mean, it's really true. You can have an organization with a lot of money and a lot of people that can't figure out how to all work together and put fast things on the racetrack. That's certainly possible. You know, we're not as big of an organization as those three, but we do continue to grow. And right now, I think provides an opportunity for us to relook at that delta between us and those big teams as we go through the struggles that we are right now. We're looking at things like developing a more robust aero department, looking at the way we structure our engineering, you know, looking at those things to make sure that we get back on the development curve with those three. So it just takes very thoughtful examination. And it's a process that probably will never stop, because Hendrick Motorsports, Joe Gibbs Racing, and Penske Racing are just very, very strong, talented organizations. And I think the fact that we've won, you know, 9 races in 3.5 years, you know, it's a lot of motivation for everybody in our company to just keep trying to work towards that.
Justin, today we saw Kyle Larson do the double. I think you've expressed interest from a car owner's perspective. Obviously a frustrating day for Kyle, admittedly so. He kind of expressed the notion that the double may be, because of the time limit, the time between the races, it just might not be a feasible thing. From a motorsports perspective, when you look at the big picture, how important is it to have somebody do that for motorsports in general? And is that something that needs to be looked at if there's a way of widening the window a little bit to help this? Or, because it seems like at this point, this notion, at least from a Cup driver's perspective, may be dead.
Yeah. I mean, my heart breaks for Kyle. Kyle's a friend of mine. We were business partners. We owned a race team together. I know how important the Speedway is to him. You know, I'm a believer that I don't think motorsports should be in competition with each other. I don't think the industry is big enough for us to be trying to make things difficult on each other. I think there's strength in collaboration between the two. So, you know, I think in the way the world is right now, you know, live events, especially live sporting events, are becoming more and more powerful and valuable in this increasingly digital and detached world. And I think that we have an amazing product, and cars going around a racetrack at 200 miles an hour is an incredibly visceral, like authentic, raw, amazing experience. And there's power in that. And I think that certainly, like, the tide that raises all ships is a real thing. So, like, if I was running everything, I would do everything in my power to make sure things like that double can happen, because I think it's an amazing opportunity for NASCAR fans that want to watch their favorite NASCAR driver maybe watch the Indy 500 for the first time, learn about Indy cars, learn new stories, all that, and vice versa. So I don't know if you like change the schedule of the day, but I think that people need to be working in a direction to try to make it happen versus trying to not make it happen. You know,
we'll go to Shane, and then we'll wrap up with Deb here.
Shane Connick, Charlotte Observer. Congratulations, Justin.
Thank you.
So Ross Chastain now becomes the first driver in 54 years to start in the LAC and win a NASCAR Cup Series race. So when you look at the team and you think about everything that you guys have been sitting up here talking about the past 24 hours, what does this mean for the number one team?
Well, you know what's funny is, and we had this talk in Victory Lane, it was like Tony Lunders, our competition director, came up to me and he was like, man, it just seems like all of our wins are like, there's no boring win like that Trackhouse has had. It's all like some kind of story. And it's funny how that happens. Like, you know, it happened at at Chicago with, you know, with Shane and everything. It's really neat that our wins typically have like some kind of historical context around them, right? Like Ross winning it at Phoenix, being the first one, I guess, in the modern era to win that wasn't in the championship, for, you know, Daniel finishing, you know, winning the closest three wide finish ever, like those kinds of things. And then a really, really cool stat like that. I think it's just really a powerful testament to everybody that works for the team and that chipped in this weekend, chipped in last night, ordered the pizzas, stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning, got there, you know, before the sun came up to button up the car and everything. To be able to look at all them, they're all tired right now. They've been working basically 48 hours straight. They're on their way home right now, and they're going to lay their head on their pillow. They got to be at the shop tomorrow at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Except some will be there at six. And, to say something like, you guys did this, you went and got the backup car, you built it overnight, you brought it to the racetrack and became the first person in, I think you said, 54 years, you know, to win from last place in the Cup Series. It's an amazing thing to put your arm around him and say, like, you deserve it. You did that. That's an honor that you have.
All right, and then we'll come up to Deb.
Deb Williams, Auto Week. Congratulations, Justin.
Thank you.
To kind of build on what Dustin was asking, when Richard Childress started building his team in the 1980s, he said he wanted to bring people in who had never worked for another race team because he wanted to train them in his way. He didn't want someone else coming in with bad habits from another race team. How would you like to go? Would you like to bring someone in that's never worked for another team to bring that, to build that camaraderie in the way you want it, rather than having to deal with maybe bad habits from other race teams?
Well, it's an interesting question because as we look at, you know, where it's difficult to find good people right now to work on these race teams, especially ones to travel. And so as we've looked to kind of expand our organization and hire, you know, we have spent time exploring where we could find people that have the right framework of experience and talent to work on race cars that maybe haven't worked on race cars before. Like, for instance, if we could put a training protocol in place inside Trackhouse and be able to hire from like the aerospace industry or something like this, where the addressable market of talent is so big and you've got so many talented people that are really good mechanically and good working on things. And, you know, maybe they leave SpaceX and they're building rockets and now they're building shock absorbers for the one car or whatever. And like, we can train them. We've had that conversation. And it's kind of sexy to like think about that and to kind of like, you know, do things a little bit different. But there's something that's very, very proprietary about racing. And there's something about, especially in NASCAR, when you're racing every single week and there's a culture in the garage area and all of that, it's very, very difficult to train for. So, you know, what I did is, you know, when we took over Ganassi and we kept, you know, 125 people that were working for Ganassi, and, you know, we just were very intentional and impactful about changing the attitude in the shop. We did, like, you know, not that Chip was doing anything wrong, but just because my way of doing things is just different, that I really wanted to identify and execute a real clear delineation point between the end of Chip Ganassi Racing and the beginning of Trackhouse Racing, and then just daily, like, investing in the work experience and investing in relationships with everybody that works the business. So, you know, to answer your question, I think there's an opportunity to attract really, really great talent from other industries. But you can't start from nothing these days, just because, you know, the tech process and like understanding the rule book and, you know, the dance of kind of like traveling every single week and the culture in the garage is just so difficult to teach somebody. So we kind of try to run that balance between getting people to understand what NASCAR racing is all about, but also are open-minded to looking at things in a fresh way and maybe like forgetting what they've known before and are open to accepting maybe like a new attitude or a new culture or anything like that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, Justin, congrats on the win and good luck in Nashville.
Thank you.